History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. You've learned, like we have, that they don't have to go untold as long as we're willing to ask a few questions and take a little time to listen. Our goal has always been to honor our veterans for their service and their sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. 80 years ago at this moment, thousands of American servicemen were embroiled in the Battle of the Bulge. If you're not following our friends with the Best Defense Foundation on social media, today would be the perfect day to start. You'll find lots of content relating to the return of several World War II veterans to the very places where they were fighting way back when. The 90th Infantry Division was one of the units involved, and we heard from a veteran from that division last week, Mervyn Hogg. If you missed that conversation, you can find it online at hometownheroesradio.com. And I mentioned that we'd be hearing more about the tough hombres of the 90th in the weeks to come, and that includes today. We're going to hear from two women who were at this year's 90th Infantry Division Association reunion in Fort Worth, Texas. But to put the association and those reunions in perspective, here's a soon-to-be 99-year-old World War II veteran who served with the 90th, Vern Schmidt, on what it all means to him.
Well, I've met some of my former members. I've met people in there who have done much for the preservation of the division to keep it alive. And well, it's amazing that this unit, clear back 80 years ago, still has, every other year we have a reunion, and a nationwide reunion. It's only been because guys have motivated each other to say we ought to get together. Nancy's, I believe it's her uncle, I believe, that was in the 90th, and she's now the one who publishes our news magazine and so forth, and has been very instrumental in keeping our unit going. I think it's the friendship that we've had with each other. We talked to each other on the telephone, different ones, and something that made our division noticeable and recognizable is the fact that we served under General Patton. And he put us, as one of his favorite divisions, he put us right in the very center of when we were making advances in World War II over in Europe. He put us right in the middle because he had confidence that we would do our job and do it right. And so through him, we have, received a lot of recognition because of General Patton. I just think we are a unit that has stuck together, though that's most all of our service is 80 years ago, yet the 90th still serves as a small unit today, here and there, and has been, I think, just an advocate for what we enjoy as citizens of one of the greatest countries, because we've had leadership both in our civilian life and during our service as soldiers and whenever needed. So I'm proud somebody told me about the 90th, and we were able to, Don and I were able to go to our first reunion. Ooh, I don't know how many years ago. We're just a bunch of old guys still enjoying friendship and togetherness. Nancy Rasmussen, she publishes a real nice newsletter 3 times a year now as an advocate for keeping history alive for the 90th, and we need to thank her for keeping the 90th name in front, and she's done a great job.
That seems like the perfect way to welcome in Nancy Rasmussen. Nancy, I'm sure there's a backstory here. How did you end up becoming the executive director of the 90th Infantry Division Association?
Well, it just started by attending reunions with my father. My mother and father used to go to reunions every year, and my mother passed away decades ago, and he was attending by himself. And so us adult kids said, "Hey, Dad, can we go to those with you?" And so at about the year 2000, we started going to the reunions and just were amazed, impressed, had fun, heard great stories. You know, you just get hooked. And so we've been going ever since, with occasionally missing a year or two. And then Rhoda Reed, who was the director, decided to retire. and they were looking for another director. And I said, well, I'm retired. I can probably do that, you know, help with that. So here I am. It's been 5 years now. So I don't think they have a retirement plan. I think you just work until you can't do it anymore.
And I'm sure it is a lot of work, clearly a labor of love. But how much of your life revolves around this role?
Well, it's been really interesting because I didn't anticipate how much sort of behind the scenes work there was. There's membership, you know, keeping track of the membership, writing the newsletter and distributing it, planning the reunion. But really the best part and most fascinating part has been the communication that you have with people from all walks of life and from all over the country and world who want information about the 90th Division. Many of them are relatives of someone who served in the 90th, but some are authors, some are college professors, some are people who were children during the war, and they are trying to reach out and connect with the family they remember. And so it's been amazing. It's been fascinating.
If someone has no idea of the history, the significance, the impact of the 90th Infantry Division, how do you explain to them why it's so special?
Well, that just happened a few minutes ago when I was upstairs in the hallway, and one of the other guests in the hotel said, what is this 90th thing? I keep seeing these. And so I said, it, you know, it was 90th Infantry Division in World War II, initiated in before World War I, but told him, explained a little bit about the association, but he had not heard about the 90th Infantry Division. So, you know, it's the most decorated division in the European theater. They hit the beach on June 8th, most of them, some on June 6th. And for those who survived, like my dad, through the war, they left 17 months later from Czechoslovakia and finally got to come home. And it, you know, there's one hero's story after another that when you attend the reunions especially, and when we had many more veterans still living, we got to overhear those stories when they talked to each other. And we have been amazed, and I'm sure Christian told you as well, the serendipitous moments where you find these connections to families or people in other countries, and it's like it was meant to be that you should connect, and creates a great interconnected family and cherished history.
So this year, you're down to three living World War II veterans able to make
right.
the reunion.
Mm-hmm.
What do those guys mean to everybody else? And maybe on the back end of that, what's the future look like?
Well, what they mean to everybody has been this fascinating time in history that they participated in and survived. And none of us can even imagine what that was like. And so those stories capture people's imaginations. They want to know more. They want to meet these people. They want to talk to them. And if they can't talk to them, they want to talk about them. And so, you know, I was in Normandy in June for the 80th anniversary of D-Day, and there were about 25 veterans at the Utah Beach ceremony. And they were just treated like rock stars. I'm sure they thought, this is crazy that, you know, we're getting this much attention, because that's the last thing any of them really want. But it was, you know, the realization that this greatest generation is disappearing rapidly and these connections are going to be lost forever. And unless storytellers like yourself and historians keep these stories alive. So really now it's more about preserving the legacy. And, you know, I don't think any of those guys or women would have ever called themselves the greatest generation. We named them that. You know, the next generation named them that because of the work they accomplished and the purpose that they unselfishly fought for. And, you know, I always hope, I told my dad many times, you know, I hope you're not the last greatest generation. I would hope that there will be another greatest generation, but a generation that accomplishes worldwide peace, not world war. And, you know, that we need to inspire our young people to not think this is a generation that cannot be replicated in some way, that they can aspire to accomplish great things, heroic things. They may be different, but that strength and resilience and courage and heroism that these guys displayed, that's not lost with them. That continues on. We just have to demonstrate that in situations that we might be faced with.
Amen. That's where so much of the value of talking about it mm-hmm. is. In the power it has to inspire and give us something to emulate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just guessing, that when the reunion rolls around, you think about your dad a little bit.
Right.
I'm sure he'd be very proud of what you're doing. What should we know about your dad if we didn't have the privilege of meeting him or getting to know him?
You know, my dad was just like all these other soldiers. He was a farm kid from Iowa, got drafted, probably had not left the state before he was drafted, and then got the adventure of a lifetime. He didn't say much about the war after he came back, but he never missed a Memorial Day program in 60 years until he was dying of cancer. That was the first program he missed from the time he got back. He would come to the reunions with us, and he'd say, "You have to stay for the Sunday morning memorial program. That's the most important part." And so in his heart, he carried the memory of those friends and comrades in arms that he was with that didn't make it home. And I think that always troubled him, you know, as survivor's guilt, they call it, that, you know, why did I make it and they didn't? But he learned not to question that. He celebrated every birthday because he knew so many guys didn't get to have a birthday. He never complained about turning 90. He never complained really about anything. So, you know, I think they learned to be resilient, to accept life as it presents itself, not ask too many questions, do the best you can. And I think that's kind of the humility that he passed on, as this whole generation passed on, I think.
And I think you probably just kind of answered the question I was going to leave you with, which is, the years you've invested in organizing this and being there and getting to know all these World War II veterans and their families, I'm just imagining it's altered your perspective on life a little bit. Maybe you just told me how, but maybe there's a little more to it.
Right. Well, I felt in my career that the one thing, that quality that I got from my dad and my mother too, was resilience. And anytime I felt that I was facing something almost impossible to accomplish or frightening or too big to grasp, I would tell myself, hey, I'm half tough hombre. I think I can do this. And I literally, I was a school teacher and school administrator, and my first job as a school principal, when I realized, oh my gosh, every problem is going to land in my lap, I literally wrote tough hombre on a piece of paper and carried it in my pocket most of that first year. And I thought, when there were times that were just, unfortunately, the Columbine shooting occurred during that time. So every school administrator, and I was working in Colorado, we were just dumbstruck. We couldn't make sense of it. And I would just think, well, sometimes life throws you things you can't make sense of, and you still just move forward and do the best you can. I'm half tough hombre.
You might be 100% by now.
Yeah, probably. And you know, my mother, I think she was a tough hombre too.
Is there anything else I didn't ask you that you want to say about the 90th or this group?
No, just, you know, we don't know how much of a future we have as an organization. If our mission is accomplished, it's accomplished. We won't be brokenhearted if it comes to an end. We will feel we did good work, but we hope it continues into the future.
It's time for our first break, but when we come back, someone who may just have what it takes to follow in Nancy Rasmussen's footsteps in that role someday. If you want to learn more about the tough hombres of the 90th and what they accomplished in World War II, there are extensive archives on the association's website, which I have linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. And we'll be right back after this. Hey, do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for way too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I gotta tell you, when it comes to your money, I think I've found a better way with EECU. Just take a look at myeecu.org and I think you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a not-for-profit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Over 350,000 members now in 12 different California counties, and access to more than 30,000 co-op ATMs and free online and mobile banking. What I love most is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. A decade ago, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. By the end of this year, more than 2,000 veterans will have visited their memorials for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement that EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 1-800-538-3328.
Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an episode recorded at this year's 90th Infantry Division Association reunion in Fort Worth, Texas. This year, only three World War II veterans were able to make it to that event. We heard from one of them last time, 100-year-old Mervin Hogg of Wilmington, North Carolina. We're going to hear from Gene Kleindl in an upcoming episode, and you heard briefly from Vern Schmidt today. You're going to hear a little more from him later, and we'll devote an entire episode soon to the new book about his life. But right now, the youngest person to speak at this year's reunion, Amelia Abney. She did that on her 18th birthday, and the more you listen to her, the more you're going to understand why the World War II veterans and their families wanted to hear from her. So how long have you been involved with the 90th Infantry Division Association?
Ever since 2012. That was the first reunion that we came to after my mother started cataloging the photos that my great-granddad took. We came up here to Fort Worth. That's where it was held that year. And just to meet the people that had helped her so much, getting those together and figuring out where they were taken and all that good stuff.
So this goes back to your great-grandfather.
Yes.
And some photos that the family had.
Yes. So
that you had no frame of reference for?
Very little. So my great-granddad was Leonard Falk, and he was always an amateur photographer. That was his other hobby besides his music. And while he was over in the European theater, he took more than 800 photographs that, of course, he was not supposed to take, and hid them up under the wheel well of the Jeep that he and his team used. So he strung communication wire ahead of the front lines so that there would be infrastructure when the rest of the Allied units came through. And because of that, he had very little supervision and a Jeep at his disposal. And so he picked up film and cameras wherever he could find them, hid them up under there, somehow got them home. And when my great-grandmother passed, my mom found them in the top of her closet in shoeboxes. No organization, just 800 photographs that looked like they were from World War II. And my mom, being a fairly kindred spirit to myself, kind of threw up her hands and said, you know, I can't just put these back in the closet. We've got to figure out what to do with them.
So how old were you that first reunion you came to?
First reunion I came to was summer of 2012, so I want to say I was 4 or 5 years old.
4 or 5 years old.
That was, my mother wasn't sure about coming because I was so young, but she kind of threw up her hands and said, you know, if she calls it a fuss, we can just turn around and go home.
But it sounds like this is something you became fascinated with yourself.
This is my passion. This is the biggest thing in the world to me. It was actually my 18th birthday, and I genuinely cannot think of anywhere else I would rather spend it.
So help me understand what that looks like for you. If you came to your first one at 5 years old and you're turning 18, how have you connected, interacted, added to the world of the 90th Infantry Division Association for most of your life here?
Yes, most of my life. In 2015, when I guess I was about 7, up until that point, of course, I was very young. I didn't really understand what was going on. I can't say I cared much beyond the fact that we were at a hotel with a swimming pool, which for a little girl from Athens, Texas, is a big deal. But in 2015, I misspoke. The first reunion I came to was in 2012. And then this one I'm talking about was 2015.
All right.
Back then we had Friday luncheon presentations. We had four presentations throughout the reunion. That was the first one, and I remember sitting at this table and looking as Vern got up to speak, and he spent probably 20 minutes talking about his experience liberating Flossenbürg, and I have never been that transfixed in my life. I hung on every word, and he got done talking, and I remember looking around like, it's just over? Like, that's all we get? And so I was very shy, if you can imagine that, and my grandmother led me over to meet Vern for the first time. And his wife had just passed away of years and years and years, and I think he was maybe a little bit lonely. and he spent the rest of that reunion. I have dozens of pictures of us sitting together at that reunion, and he's, you know, sketching the Battle of the Bulge and Dragon's Teeth for me on these Marriott hotel napkins, and I'm just looking at him about like that. And I, at that point, I knew that I wanted to do that and be around those people for the rest of my life. And so I wrote him letters until the next reunion. And then I met Stan Spiller, who is another 90th veteran, and then John Day, and then Tom Ingram and Bill Sisk. And they were my world. I thought of them as my heroes and my dearest friends, and anything that I could do to support them or learn about what they had been through, I did. I read War from the Ground Up, cover to cover, I don't know how many times. And that was all I wanted to do. And so Bill and Tom have passed away now. John has as well. Vern is the only one that's still able to come to reunions. But anything I can do to be around this is what I do. So I'm a writer, and I've written several articles for the 90th and then for another group called the Rona Survivors Memorial Association as well.
Mm-hmm.
And traveled to their reunions and spoken in support of them. But this is my home. This is everything I need.
Well, and, you know, this is a departure from the 90th, but the Rona survivors. So that's a story that was kept secret for many years after the war.
You're correct.
And most people your age have never heard of it. So give us your elevator speech on the Rona, because there might be some people out there listening and say, hey, I'm going to do a little research on
this. Sure. So the HMT Rona was a troop transport used by the Allies. And for most of its career as a troop transport, it transported GIs from the coast of North Africa to India to be sent to the front lines of the CBI theater. And on Thanksgiving Day of 1943, it was struck by an experimental German glide bomb that was radio-controlled. It was the first ever radio-controlled bomb called the Henschel 293, if my memory serves me correctly. It was a dead hit. It was the only hit that convoy took. And 1,015 American GIs were killed either on impact or in the water afterwards. And that's still a rough count. I think that the real count is higher because she was transporting men from so many different divisions and units, all going to different places, that records were shoddy. And I don't think we will ever really know everyone who was lost on that ship. But after that disaster, members of the Pioneer and other ships scooped who they could out of the water, took them back to shore, and the American government looked around and said, you know, we can't let the Germans know how effective this was. I forget the percentage that it took out, but it was very high. And so they gathered the men up, spoke to them, and told them that basically terrible things would happen if they ever spoke about their experiences. Telegrams were sent to the family members of the men who passed saying, you know, your loved one is either missing in action or killed in action. No further information to come. And so there were hundreds of families who sat around, especially if the telegram said missing in action, who expected their boy to come home until they died, because there was never any information of, no, they're not in a prisoner of war camp. They're not lost in the jungle. They are unfortunately in the Mediterranean Ocean and they are not coming home. So that was kept secret for years and years and years until a group of survivors finally banded together and said, what happened to us was real. What happened to us deserves recognition. It was the largest loss of American life at sea during World War II, period. Only beaten out by the Arizona, and she was at port, so she isn't counted in that statistic. The National World War II Museum has no recognition for that event, aside from an article that I actually collaborated on that's been published on their website. That's the only mention you will find. And so the Rona Survivors Memorial Association has been working for decades to get more recognition and get the National World War II Museum in particular to put up something to honor the lives that were lost.
So you just gave us more than, you know, a lot of college professors could probably give us. And unless I'm mistaken, the only reason you connected with that story and have such a grasp of it is because of these photos your great-grandfather left behind that lit
exactly.
A kind of spark for you.
Exactly. And Vern, I would not know Laura Bailey if it wasn't for Vern. because he brought her to the 2022 reunion and was bragging on the fact that I was a writer, as Vern is wont to do. And Laura Bailey perked up and said, you know, obviously you can't, do the master's degree program that I did, which I think is discrimination, that someone who hasn't graduated high school can't, you know, do a master's degree program. But she said that I could write for their website, which is the Global World War II Monuments website. And that looks at physical monuments left to any part of World War II and the public memory that surrounds them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I met her, I wanted to write about the monument to the 90th Division, which sits on Utah Beach, because that's kind of the 90th monument. I can picture it. I could probably tell you what's written on it. And she said, you know, I want you to do that, but first I want you to do something else, and I need to tell you a story. She's emailing me. We need to have a Zoom meeting so I can tell you about this. And I caught COVID at the last reunion. I was sick months and months and months. And I'm laying there thinking, couldn't you send me an email? Couldn't we make this a little simpler? And I'm so glad that she made me, you know, get on that call with her, because that lit, just like Vern's presentation, that lit a spark in me. Because I always, if there's a group that is in need of anything, especially if it is a World War II group, let me at it. I want in. I want to help. I want to do anything I can to get those guys what they deserve, because I grew up surrounded by them. They were like, I never got to know my great-granddad.
Mm.
And so they, especially Vern, I think of him like my great-grandfather, and all the other guys I never got to know. I think that they deserve the same honor and the same respect and the same memory as the ones that I did get to know.
So it kind of sounds like this has kind of changed the whole trajectory of your life. What are you hoping to do with this genre moving forward?
I have no idea what lies in store for me. I am probably heading off to college next fall. I want to pursue a degree in psychology and go back to my hometown and practice there.
Okay.
And one of the reasons that I want to do that is because I know that having my own practice will leave me some time to myself. And I hope someday to do Nancy's job or be on the board in any way that I can, because as long as I am alive, I am determined that the memory of the guys that I love so much will not be forgotten, and that this association that meant so much to them is not going to fall apart. So anything they will let me do, I will do, and I will continue to write. That's my other big passion, and of course it feeds into the World War II work as well. So wherever there's an opportunity for me, that's where I'll be.
It's time for our final break, but we'll hear more from young Amelia Abney when we come back, as well as a soon-to-be 99-year-old who thinks the world of her. If you'd like to watch Amelia's speech from the 90th Infantry Division Association reunion, you can find it on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page or at hometownheroesradio.com. And we'll be right back after this. When times get tough and budgets get tight, a lot of businesses start slashing their marketing budgets, which all too often turns into a costly mistake. Instead, what if you could customize that investment to zero in on your target audience with surgical precision? And why am I saying what if? Because I already know you can with Search Strategy Marketing. It's not about how much you spend, it's about the strategy behind it. And Search Strategy Marketing is ready to prove it to you with a free, no-obligation assessment of your current efforts. Learn how to outrank your competition with a free, customized action plan just for Hometown Heroes listeners. Just go to hometownheroesradio.com and click on that light bulb logo for Search Strategy Marketing. It doesn't matter what your business is, Search Strategy Marketing can lead you to the best way to connect with your customers. So look for that light bulb logo today at hometownheroesradio.com and plug into the power that can take your business to the next level. When prices start going up, we all look for ways to save. So here's a simple message for you. Look no further than EECU. Did you know you can finance your mortgage through EECU? How about a home equity line of credit? EECU makes HELOC loans easy. And when the car business is all over the map, the auto loan rates are as steady as can be. EECU is a not-for-profit credit union, not a bank. So the members always win. Go to myeecu.org to become a member today or call 1-800-5
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea, You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and another episode recorded at the 90th Infantry Division Association's reunion in Fort Worth, Texas this year. 80 years ago right now, the men of the 90th were wondering if they'd make it to Christmas. You heard a little bit from World War II veteran Vern Schmidt earlier. In a few weeks, we're going to hear a lot more from Vern as we introduce a new book about his life. But before the break, we were listening to 18-year-old Amelia Abney share about the division and her affinity for the special family that the 90th Association represents. Let's hear what that World War II vet, Vern Schmidt, has to say about Amelia.
Now, there's a little gal that we first met when she was just barely 7 years old. She comes with her grandma and her mother, and her grandpa served in the 90th. She's just an inspiration. She comes and wants to talk to our people and learn. She's being invited to a university to learn more about the military and also to bring information to them about her life, knowing our division and speaking about it, and proud to be, as a young girl, not too many of them get invited to something like this. They don't figure those girls, they don't know nothing. But she, if you go to, in fact, you have met her, she knows what's going on, and she knows the history. And I've been, in fact, to receive her writing in my book that just got published. That was a thrill also, just to know that here's a little girl I met at 7 and now she's 18 and we still know each other from the reunions that she comes to and becomes a part of. Just a beautiful little gal and a smart little gal. So, yeah, Amelia means a lot to my family.
And, of course, we've already heard a taste of what Vern and the other 90th Infantry Division veterans have meant to Amelia.
With regard to your own great-grandfather, are there some things that you've come to know about him that you wouldn't have known otherwise without all this interaction?
I think that there are several ways that I've gotten to know more about him. I think my grandmother has told me more stories. She accompanies me along with my mother to all the reunions. Mm-hmm. And I think there have been some promptings for her to tell me more stories about him that otherwise, you know, family members can assume that you know certain stories just because you're a part of the family, even though they were never told to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it made me more interested in knowing about his life in general because he passed away in the 80s. He was one of the oldest people to enlist. All the other GIs called him Pappy because he was in his 30s and his hair had turned snow white. And there, I can't think of anything specific from the 90th, but interestingly, he was passionate about music. He was a Dixieland musician. And a young lady that he played with when he was playing some of his last gigs around the East Texas area is now my vocal teacher. And I have been very honored to work with her and hear about some of his favorite songs. And get to sing some of his favorite songs with somebody who played with him. And I'm planning to incorporate some of them into my senior voice recital that I'll be putting on at the end of the year.
Well, you mentioned senior voice recital, and I'm thinking, what do your classmates think of all this? What do your friends think of the amount of time and energy and emphasis you place on World War II and World War II veterans?
So I'm actually homeschooled, and I have been since I was in second grade.
Uh-huh.
If I did have classmates, I'm sure they would be bewildered by that and many other things about me. But the friends that I cultivate, I think, are really proud of me, and they think it's fascinating. One of my best friend, actually, I've been trying to get him to reunions for the same 10 years I've been coming to him, and he's actually coming in for my presentation. And he thinks it's the coolest thing in the world. He's very complimentary.
What do you plan to share with these? I mean, you've got three World War II veterans, but widows, daughters, sons, grandkids, friends. Can you give me a nutshell of what you hope to convey?
So I'm going to go through and talk about my great-granddad and sort of that web that I laid out for you of all the connections and how I got connected with the Rona.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, and I'm going to tell them essentially this, you know, it's an example of what foundations in history can do for a young person. It's an update on my life because many of them have seen me grow up and are very interested in what I've been doing. But most of all, it really is just a thank you. And I'm going to have to try very hard not to be emotional. But I like to think that John and Tom and Bill know what an impact they had on me because my life would be so different. And I am so, so grateful to everyone here, but especially Vern and Stan for everything they've done for me. So it really is a thank you.
You know, one of the questions that that I try to ask every World War II veteran, because when I started doing this 20 years ago, you know, they were thought of as a dying breed. And the idea was, you know, people today don't know about World War II. What do they need to know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here, you're so far removed age-wise from World War II, but now you're about the same age a lot of them were when they were going overseas.
I absolutely am.
And it's clear you have quite an understanding. So if you had the rest of the 18-year-olds in America listening to you speak, what would you tell them about why World War II still matters in 2024?
They're the reason we get to complain. And they deserve all of our gratitude. Everything that we have to give, they deserve a thank you. Because they are the reason, no matter what you believe, no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on, they are the reason that we get to stand up and say that we don't like something. They are the reason that we get to choose what path we take in life. And they deserve all of our thanks and all of our remembrance.
Amen.
And respect.
And sorry, I'm asking you a lot of questions just because I know you can handle them. For someone who's never heard of the 90th Division and they see that TO on your name tag there for Tough Hombres, why is the 90th Infantry Division significant? How would you explain what the 90th has done?
The 90th was part of Patton's Third Army. And I like to say that they were Patton's favorite division because that's what he said. And they were the liberating unit. I think of them very much as a liberating unit because they were not, there were only a couple of units that went with the 4th Division on D-Day. Most of the 90th guys came through after D-Day, plus three, plus four, however many, and came behind a lot of those main lines to liberate. They suffered a lot of casualties. The reason that we still have a lot of 90th vets that other units don't have is because so many were replacements. Vern was a replacement. Several of my other guys were a replacement. And I also think of the 90th as a very, as a story of rising up because they were under very poor leadership for the first couple of years of the war. They were thought of as one of the worst divisions. They were sort of, you know, let's write out the plan and then what are we going to do with the 90th? And then they got better commanders and they rose up just like their ancestors that pioneered Texas and Oklahoma. They got it together and they became one of the best fighting units and one of the units that did the most liberating. They liberated Flossenbürg, several other concentration camps, and of course, French towns, German towns throughout the region.
You know your stuff.
I try.
I don't know if you've thought about this before. I'm guessing you probably have. Your great-grandfather that you never met, if he were sitting here right now, is there something that you would want to ask him or anything that you would want to tell him?
I would want to ask him what his favorite big band song is because I'm very, aside from my World War II, I'm very into vintage fashion of the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And I am a classically trained vocalist, but what I really love to do is swing and jazz. And so I would love to know, of course I can get some info from my voice teacher about what he liked, but I would love to know what his favorite big band song was. I would want to ask him what Athens was like when he was a young man, because my family has been there 7 or 8 generations, and kind of helped found the town. I would want to know about that. And I would want to know what his takeaway from the war was. Because I know Vern came out with a very positive perspective. He came out with a perspective on how the Lord used him through the war. I know Carver McGriff had the same perspective. I've read his book and knew him briefly when I was younger. And then I know there were some guys who came out with a less positive outlook. And I would love to know how it really affected him and what he really thought Mm-hmm. And I would say thank you. And that he is my hero too, even though I never got to know him.
Do you think you could put into words for us how this bulk of your life to this point, right? About two-thirds of your life spent around 90th Division veterans and their families. How it's affected your perspective on life, how you see the world.
I've always been very confident. I've always been very outgoing and able, not necessarily combative, but I can be. I would say that I have a very strong personality. And I think my perspective on life from being around all these World War II guys has been that you should try to be at peace with all people, but you never sit quietly when something is being, when something wrong is being done. You get up, and whether that's with a pen or with an Enfield, you work for what is right and you fight for what is right.
And for the unindoctrinated listener who doesn't know what an Enfield is, you want to tell him?
It was the British rifle used during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had my senior pictures taken, I had some done with mine.
Have you fired it?
I haven't fired that one. I think it was a goal to for my granddad to clean up a little bit. He gave me a few World War II era rifles. But I am a deer hunter, and I was on a 4-H rifle team for a good long while.
All right. So nobody better mess with you.
No, it's not a good idea.
I think I have to ask you if you want to sing for us.
Oh, my goodness. I would love to.
Is there something you know that these three World War II veterans who are here would love to hear you sing?
That's been something I've wanted to ask Vern. I've only got to see him for a minute, but what if he had a favorite song? I know my great-granddad loves Stardust. That's one. And I know he loved The Lonesome Road, which is a really old blues tune. They would probably enjoy Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy.
That's a pretty popular one. Have you ever pretended to be one of the Andrews Sisters?
I have.
I had a
feeling.
That
was a childhood hobby.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and I got to perform that one for an old folks home there in Athens. Uh-huh. So that was a lot of fun.
What on-the-spot a cappella are you most confident in? I haven't been able to rattle you yet, so I'm just going to keep on trying.
I don't think you can. I'm hard to rattle. I just make a fool of myself and go with it. Let's try Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy.
Let's do it.
Let me think. There was a famous trumpet man from out Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft. But then the number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowin' reveille. He's the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy of Company B. They made him blow a bugle for his Uncle Sam. It really brought him down because he couldn't jam. The captain seemed to understand, because the next day the cap went out and drafted a band. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy of Company B. A toot, a toot, a tootly odd, a toot. He blows it 8 to the bar. In boogie rhythm, he can't blow a note unless a bass and guitar is playing with him. He makes the company jump when he plays reveille. He's the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy of Company B.
Wow. Beautiful.
Thank you.
Outstanding. I can see why the guys love you. You know, something else that came to mind, because some people listen to the show all the time and they've heard this from other veterans, but some may not have. Can you elaborate a little bit on why your great-grandfather had to be careful about what he put in the mail?
I mean, you couldn't take photographs. You couldn't write home where you were. That was way too identifying of where the Army was and what it was doing, especially mm-hmm. for him, because he was ahead of the front lines. I mean, that was just a travesty in the eyes of the government. I can't imagine what would have happened to him if he'd got caught, but I guess he didn't.
Amen. But I guess with it, I was thinking about, you know, because one of the things that got me hooked doing this when I first started was interviewing my granddad in a situation where he got the Silver Star. And I said, what were you thinking when everybody's ducking for cover, and the shells are still coming in, and you and your Jeep driver kept going back in to pull guys out of the tanks. What were you thinking? He said, what was I thinking? I thought I was going to get killed. I said, I'm glad you didn't. And he said, yeah, you wouldn't be around. In your case, though, I'm guessing as old as he was, he probably already had children?
No.
He didn't?
No. So that's a great story, actually. He had his wife got pregnant just before he shipped out to Camp Barkley, if I remember.
Okay.
And he was still in training in the States when my grandmother's oldest brother was born. And it turned out that from the camp where he was training to get to the next place they wanted him to go, I believe to ship out, they had to go through Athens because Athens was a railroad town.
Mm-hmm.
And my great-great-grandparents lived just off the tracks. And Bill had just been born, and the train stopped to get water. And so my Grandpa Leonard's mother took the baby from my Granny Evie and ran down to the train tracks and passed him up to a GI that was leaning out of the train because nobody could get on or off. And so they passed the baby outside the train windows all the way down the line to where my Grandpa Leonard was. So he got to see his son. Even if he hadn't come home, he would have gotten to see his son. But no, I would not be around because my grandmother was born in 1951.
So if he didn't survive the war,
I would not be here. And that goes for my other great-grandfather, who was 17 in the Merchant Marines in the Pacific, which is a whole nother.
Which was the most dangerous thing to be in World War II.
It was. It was. Got a lot of interesting history surrounding me.
So you're kind of a little miracle sitting right here.
A little bit. I think a lot of us are.
Amen.
I think everybody is, really.
Anything else that you think we ought to know about the 90th Infantry Division or why you love these guys so much?
They are the kindest men I have ever been around outside of my family. They are my family, and they are the toughest hombres anybody's ever going to meet.
Can't say it any better than that.
Again, that was Amelia Abney. You can find her speech from the 90th Infantry Division Association reunion on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page or at hometownheroesradio.com. Big thanks to Nancy Rasmussen as well. And as for Vern Schmidt, we're going to be discussing the new book about his life in the weeks to come. Thanks for spending this hour with us today. I'm Paul Leffler, wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas and reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.
He was the top man at his craft. But then the number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowin' reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy, Company B.